Every day I'm shuffling.
Broadcasting from atop the Hensler Financial Building in the heart of Georgia's financial district, Kennesaw, Georgia. This is Money Talks.
All right, so I know we've got some, we do have a bunch of email questions.
We
so
do.
You want to go over those?
Absolutely. Let's start with our good friend Bill Murray, who writes, technology has hurt brick and mortar retailers. Will it do the same to the oil industry? Honestly, there have been lots of changes in technology in just about every industry we're talking about. Brick and mortar retailers, you know, we were just talking about it. Walmart doing well in spite of the strength that Amazon's brought. We all love to shop from the house. You can go Prime and get things really quickly. When you talk about oil, what's going to kill oil? Well, our industrial complex is basically reliant on oil. Our automobiles, for the most part, are reliant still on oil. We do have some alternatives. We saw recently that Tesla came out with a new roof system, solar roof, that would possibly get us off of electricity and, you know, make changes there. A lot of folks are focused
on... Solar roof for the car?
Yes. No. Well, the car as well, but the solar roof is really more for the house.
Oh.
They've got one. Now, think of this, Bill.
How's that work in the rain?
2,000. Well, they got a battery system, so it'll supply for a little while. But a 2,000-square-foot house, the system costs about $50,000 after tax breaks. I don't see it being mainstream. I think it's too expensive still. And they're saying that it'll save you $65,000 over a period of 30 years. To me, there's just not really enough interest, and you're not going to develop enough interest until you get it down into a price range that's more affordable for the
right.
common person. Maybe it gets there. I don't think it's going to happen soon. But, you know, ultimately... Yeah.
So you take the question as because of these technological advances,
right.
people won't be using oil?
Yeah, that's yeah. I think the crux of his question. Now, we do see people moving their automobiles. We see more and more hybrids. We see electric cars, the Tesla being as popular as it is a move in that direction. But we haven't really adopted even the electric cars nearly to the level that Europe has, and I think Europe's only about 8-9% total penetration in that market. I just don't think we're there. And you know what's bizarre to me? We had oil at what, $180 something like that.
High.
I think it was one tick.
Right.
2008. And what was the conversation at the time? It was, you know, we've got this is peak oil. Peak oil. We weren't going to have enough oil
right.
to run our system for the long term. Now we're seeing oil below $50 a barrel.
Right.
We know that the Saudis can produce a whole lot more than they do today, and they
right.
proved it over the last couple of years.
Well, and we also know we can, too.
Right.
Well, that's true. Yeah, well.
Plus
yeah,
natural gas.
Technology's actually helped that significantly.
Right.
The fracturing technology, called fracking now more specifically, was a technological change. But I think ultimately, in order for people to adopt those renewable energy sources, you're going to have, and we still have it, you have tax breaks. The government has to pitch in and help and try to get us moving in that direction just to make it cheap enough. Once you get a certain level of usage, then you'll probably see the price come down. You'll see folks start piling on a little better. But I don't think I would worry enough about it at the moment to do away with oil. The thing that I have a bigger problem with when it comes to oil is the fact that its prices are basically managed by a cartel in the Middle East. They just proved, Saudi Arabia just proved that they could spike prices lower just by overproducing oil. And they now the same conversation's going on. You know, everybody's holding back. We're trying to make sure that the price stays at a certain level because in showing the world that they could control it, they also proved where their bottom was. They started getting in some pretty serious financial straits by the fact that they had lowered oil. I think they had set their budget of Saudi Arabia, I'm talking about, at about $73 a barrel. And then they went ahead and spiked prices down in the 20s. It got tough. You know, some of their construction companies started the checks they were writing to their employees started bouncing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start having that issue, then they went too far. They are talking more about diversifying their economy. I don't know why they didn't do that 100 years ago. 100 is probably too much. But in the 1940s is when they really came into being
right.
as an oil powerhouse. But, you know, you think about over the last, 70 years?
Right.
7 years?
Right.
You should have been able to diversify your economy during a period like that. You got some young folks in Saudi Arabia, some of the young leaders that are talking more about it now. Be great for them to do it. And I think, you know, a lot of folks point to the fact that they're trying to float Saudi Aramco stock price, you know, IPO a portion of the company as them selling at the top or selling in an economy or a time when oil is still a viable option. Yeah, why wouldn't you do it? Why wouldn't you have done this years ago is
right.
my question. So
right.
I wouldn't worry so much about oil going away. I don't believe in my lifetime that oil is going to plummet to the point where we don't use it as still a pretty significant staple. But sure,
what oil companies
are
you enamored with right now?
I don't know if I'd call it enamored. I like to be exposed to the sector. ExxonMobil is probably my biggest focus. And then, you know, we have exposure to Schlumberger,
mm-hmm.
Some of the services companies like that. We recently in one of the portfolios bought Valero, which is a refiner. And, you know, the biggest thing is when we make the swap, Valero more specifically was a dividend play. So we want to make sure the dividend is
covered
well. You know,
what do you usually look at when you're looking at dividend coverage?
I like to make sure that it's at least one, which means that the earnings being generated behind the scene are sufficient to cover the dividend payout. Of course, it needs to be a little more than that. You talk about earnings, it's not really cash flow. But anything over one, I feel pretty secure with. Just making sure that the amount that the company is earning is sufficient to pay the investors that dividend that we expect to see. Of course, it's got to be, you know, the interest on any debts are paid before that.
Right.
And, you know, so there's lots of items that are in there. But the dividend is an after earnings thing. So, you know, as long as the company is showing me GAAP related earnings on a extraordinary basis, meaning going forward, operations are still going to be sufficient to cover that dividend, then I'm usually happy.
I always like that extraordinary. But what if they keep having extraordinary every quarter?
Well, extraordinary is not going to be long-term sustainable. So what is in extraordinary? The extraordinary would be if the company sold off a division, if they closed down a segment, you know, if they sold off a specific asset and they had a gain from it, then they don't count the gain. So a lot of times it's a lower number than you would get if the earnings were reported just totally with, you know, all we want to see is going forward into the future that operations are going to still be steady enough to pay us that dividend. So I don't want you out there selling all your assets. It's not long-term sustainable. You start selling things off and it bothers me. The company
right.
is starting to deteriorate
right.
in my
right.
opinion. This is not, we wouldn't talk about Sears as a long-term investment because of those sorts of things. You know, in the last couple of months, they've sold off Die Hard and they've sold off Craftsman. Yeah, so that's a bother to me, but you want to make sure it's long-term sustainable. So extraordinary is very important.
But we got a couple of planning questions, right,
sure.
DJ?
Yeah, we do. We have a question in reference to the cost of college and what it includes. A lot of times what we feel and what we see and hear from parents is, you know, they think that, you know, I'm going to only need to spend money on tuition, room and board. And there's a little bit more that goes into the planning and cost of actually going to school.
Lots of inflation in college.
There would be
spending.
Yep.
What do we see? It's high. We just talked about inflation earlier in the show, around 2%. But college and education related inflation is over 5%.
Yeah.
And it has been for a while. So that's one of the big things you got to concern yourself with. Not how much college is today, but I mean, if you're talking 10 years out at 5%, that's a huge growth.
Massive, absolutely. You know, books and supplies, obviously,
right.
those It's amazing how much they want to charge for books.
Just the books.
Just the books.
And you get to sell them back.
Yeah, you get to sell them back for half price.
Maybe 30%.
It's great.
Well, don't they also do room and board in the calculation too, or no?
Yes.
They do. Okay. Yeah. But the other additional cost, I mean, you got transportation and personal expenses that a lot of people don't ever take into play.
Sure.
You know, especially when we're talking to, you know, talking about student loans, a lot of those can be fed into a student loan.
Yeah.
You know, they use that as kind of a payday.
It's not the cost of college. We always talk about this here. We're like, look, the cost of college, you can go to Kennesaw State for like $8,500.
Yeah.
You know, that's the cost of getting the education.
Right.
Now, how do you
do they need to live? I mean, have you seen
where you're going to some of these apartments?
Housing? Yeah.
I'm like, I live there.
That's
crazy.
Yeah, they got some nice stuff. And,
nice
and that's
housing.
A lot of the reason that we have so much inflation in that price,
well,
right?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And you talk, and they literally can borrow enough so that they
can float the entire process. All the food, you know, everything can be taken care of. And on campus, there's not just the mess hall, if you will.
Right.
I mean, there's nice restaurants. If you will,
yeah,
you know, you can go
right.
up and order different flavors and different, you know. Also, you know, like you were saying, personal expenses. I mean, how far are you going to live if you're not living in the nice, you know, nearby locales? You know, what are those prices be? What's the fuel cost? Are you going to give your kid the 87 Honda, or are you going to give him the nice Ford Mustang?
What I would do is give the kid a job.
You know,
there you go. Yeah, how about that? That's a concept.
What's
Have
that?
Have you ever heard of job?
J-O-B.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even a four-letter word.
Nope.
But it is to some people.
Yeah, it almost is.
All right. So let's see. What else do we got here?
So a lot goes into play in there. So, you know, it's not just how much is it. It takes a little bit more to define those actual costs.
Yeah. You want to cover that one, Stephanie from Woodstock? I'm 67, approaching retirement, and will enroll in Medicare once I leave my employer. If I'm covered by Medicare, should I have additional health insurance?
It's a tough question. Obviously, you know, pre-plan, since we don't know a lot about your personal situation, we'd love to have an opportunity to really dive into this one. An easy answer, yes. You know, if you have a little bit more coverage, Medicare you can assume is a secondary plan. So if you have, let's just, you know, have any type of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Georgia. If you currently have Blue Cross Blue Shield, you go to the hospital. They will be your primary coverage. Medicare will kind of be a secondary.
The backstop.
Exactly. And then obviously any out-of-pocket expenses you'd pay for there as well. So, you know, any additional coverage you can have is going to be a little bit better for you budget-wise. Though, yes, you're going to have the additional expense paying for those monthly premiums in the long run. If there is an illness, you're going to be covered, if you will. You got two different insurance premiums kind of coming into play, kicking in to assist on some of those larger expenses. So a quick answer would be, if you can afford to have the second coverage, you know,
do it.
Try to keep it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got time to cover another. This is another one of those retailers we've been talking about. Miriam from Roswell asks, I've been hanging on to Foot Locker for a while. It was initially a temporary holding, but it has kept going up. I've been good about taking my profits when I can. Should I keep holding this one? It's never a bad thing to have profits in an investment, right? It might cost you a little in tax, but that's really just a haircut off the top of the profit that you made. When I look at this company, it looks a little bit expensive, a PEG of 1.41. What is PEG? It's the forward price to earnings ratio divided by the growth rate. The expected growth rate on this company, Foot Locker, is 10.12%. I always measure that relative to what it's done lately. The five-year earnings growth is 17.86%, which I would say going forward, 10% is probably not a very bad guess. One of the things that Foot Locker does is it's got a pretty robust e-commerce site as well. So any of the companies you see in retail, while this is a brick-and-mortar play, it has pretty reasonable ways that an individual can go out, a consumer can go out and buy their shoes.
Different outlets.
Online. Yep. Exactly. So, you know, I think all things considered, it does meet our criteria for investment based on financial strength and safety. When I look at what other analysts think, they expect to see another 10% gain in the next 12 months. If you look at the one-year target price, it's about $83. Right now, the company's selling at $76. So we got approximately a 10% gain, you know, based on what expectations are. Of course, they never tell you if they think a recession's coming or what the conditions, economic conditions, might be going forward either. But you know, as far as what they got, look at what it's done over the past 12 months, almost 25%. So it's blown the market away, more or less. S&P was up 18.95% in that period. The consumer discretionary sector is up about 15.17. So it's been a real standout. Does meet the criteria. You know, if you want to stay in that consumer discretionary, there is no issue there. I think it's a decent stock.
All right.
Hold. It's interesting because, you know, one thing that our clients always say is that, you know, they make a little money, but then they never want to sell for the gain.
That's right.
So you're saying it's okay to sell for gains. Is that what you're saying?
It is absolutely always okay to sell. But you're going to have to sell for the gain in order to spend the money.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you next week.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.